FMX Network production.
Welcome to the Fly Racing Steve Mathis Show, presented by Maxxis Tires, Renthal, and Motorsport.com on RacerXOnline.com. With your continuing gracious support of our sponsors, we're thriving at over 1,800 podcasts delivered with over 20 million downloads. Click the Amazon banner on Pulp MX to help us out. Donate via Patreon if it suits you. And as always, enrich your moto lifestyle by working with the sponsors who support us. The original Moto Podcast, featuring legends of the past, stars of today, season previews, race reviews, introspection, opinion, facts, and laughs. Here's the voice bringing it all to you, Steve Mathis.
Welcome to the Fly Racing RacerX Review Podcast for the first time ever. The show is what it probably should have been all along. It is Jason Wygant and Jason Thomas only because Steve Mathis has been exiled to Canada. He has been deported. He has been exported. JT, there are tariffs. We know there are trade barriers, trade wars. He said he's going there to watch Phil race a Canadian national at Gopher Dunes. But honestly, do you think the United States, in the current climate, will let him back in?
Well, if they look at his Twitter or had a long conversation, probably not. But no, I think this is going to be the best review podcast we've ever done. It's simply what's going to happen. We're going to set a new bar.
Yep.
There's going to be a new unlock had here because Steve is not here. It's going to be shorter. I think that's probably going to happen too. So, no, I'm excited for it. I think everybody that was at Redbud, if you go there, that's all you need to know. Like, everybody that goes there is happy they're there. And I've never talked to anybody that has regretted going to this national. So another fun day was had by all. And yeah, let's get into it.
And now you don't have an argument with Steve to bring your mood down. Like, you can continue on this high from Redbud like you would have on a normal Sunday.
I was already arguing with him an hour ago. You were on the group text.
That is true.
That out of the way. We got it out of the way.
Yes.
I didn't want to miss a day without an argument, so we got it over with.
Yes, JT and Kiefer were discussing, I'm not going to go as aggressive to say arguing, but you were discussing something, and then Steve chimed in, and here we're off to the races. So
yeah,
at least you got it in.
I was debating with Kiefer, and okay. I am argumentative, I will admit that, but Steve had nothing to do with it. And I was not being disrespectful to Kiefer. If I was, it was not on purpose. And Steve came in hot. And so I was like, okay, I'll come in hot also. And then we were off to the races.
Okay. Well, this has been going on since what, 99? What was the year that this basically started between you two?
Yep. End of 98, something like that.
Okay. All right. So we're past the silver anniversary. We're headed to 50 years. Will be the next big celebration of JT and Steve arguing. The show, of course, brought to you by Fly Racing. Use the code PULPMX to save on their website. Cooper Webb has been testing the durability of the gear. I feel like he's been in a lot of first turn crashes lately. And if Justin Brayton was wearing the gear, he would look phenomenal and have podium speed. JT, signing of the year is Fly Racing getting the Supercross Championship. It is the signing of the year. Congrats.
I think it was. I had nothing to do with it.
Really?
I can say that on the front end. No, I mean, I supported it, but there are some deals that are my deals. Like, I very much sought out and got the DeCarli deal with Lucas Kunin. That would not have happened had I not been a part of it. Oh. Cooper Webb, I had nothing to do with. So kudos to the team, everyone else at Fly Racing, Anthony and Dalton and everybody else there, Hope. But that one was not me. But I'm happy to ride the coattails of it. That's for damn sure.
I just hope that when he has number one gear next year, that it's seen more than when Brandon Jessamine had a number one. Did he even make it out of practice in Supercross 20 some years ago? I don't even know. Was he ever seen? There was like one photo of him with number one, 1E gear. And I think he got hurt in practice at Vegas. So better luck with that.
Same
and
as
J-Law. Did J-Law ever run
same
it?
Same as J-Law. Yep.
One race, two races?
Same as J-Law. Yep.
He barely made it too. Also brought to you by Maxxis, Renthal, and Motorsport.com. as is also the Weed Show post-race show. And so we will hook them up. And also brought to you by, I mentioned Renthal. Our buddy Paul sent me a whole bunch of stuff for my bike, my kid's bike. So thank you, Paul. Thank you, Renthal. We'll talk about them more a little bit later, as well as Max's tires, which would be the tire of Freddie Norin, but he's gone MIA. They're giving him some time off. I think he's going to skip Millville as well. So no Max. The Max is on the bike, just Freddie's not riding it. And also Brunt Boots and Racer X itself and Onyx Maps. We'll talk about all those later. Let's get into it, JT, with Red Bud. Okay, it's over. We had a little discussion earlier in the year where a guy, James Stewart, thought maybe Jet Lawrence isn't quite as dominant as it looks. He takes full advantage of insane starts and track position. That's over, JT. The case closed. Gavel, hammer, it's done. He can win from 18th.
Yeah, the only thing I'll say, we wanted to see this scenario. We wanted to see this scenario play out where he really had to apply himself and he couldn't just kind of manage. Like, he had to lean into it. He had to go because he was 14 seconds down. The only thing I'll say for anybody else, because I take a lot of heat for being so pro-Jet, Chase Sexton was pretty damn good in that second moto. Like, Chase was holding pace.
He was.
So I don't want to go crazy on Jet as much as he deserves it, because I thought Chase put in a really valiant effort of matching pace in that second moto in his first race back, really, of the season. His first race of the pro motocross season, really. So as incredible as Jet was, I kind of want to give some credit to Chase in the same moment, because he was the only guy that could even come close to going as fast as Jet was in that second moto.
Yeah, we obviously will be talking about Sexton coming back here, and the result wasn't great. But yeah, riding wise, I think this was a home run for Sexton. Here's what's scary. JT, the year started with this great anticipation. We know Sexton went out. We know a lot of the other guys we thought were going to be fast. It's going to become the Prado pod. That hasn't materialized. The one guy that was really challenging Jet, the record book shows, is Tomac. Here's the problem there. Both Tomac and Jet were coming back from injury. Yes, I think Tomac had a head start. His injury wasn't as bad. I think he was on the bike earlier. We all know that guys are always entering motocross somewhat underprepared. I think Tomac actually was prepared this time. So he could run with Jet the first couple of weeks. But I think, now this was bad luck, his bike broke, but I think we're starting to see Jet and the Honda get better. And the head start that everybody else had on him starting to fade. And now we're starting to see the real reality, which might be we're back to maybe only Chase Sexton can run with him.
Yes, agreed. But I almost feel, well, I shouldn't say almost. I do feel that Eli's getting worse. Like, it's, I don't know why. I don't have a reason, you know, and if I can't logically tell you why, it's kind of a pointless take. But the results would say, and his competitiveness would say, that he's regressing right now. He wasn't as good as we expected him to be at Southwick.
Yeah.
And he wasn't even anywhere near that this weekend at Redbud. He really wasn't.
He was going to get third in the first moto, but he was not challenging Hunter or Jet at any point.
No. And Hunter has surpassed him for the second best guy. Like, he just has.
Yeah.
And that in and of itself is regression from where he was. Like, I thought that Eli would come in and get better alongside Jet and alongside Hunter, because he hadn't raced since Tampa. So I thought he would continually get better, find his form. He hadn't raced pro motocross since 2022. So there was going to be some regaining of form there as well. And I don't want to write him off. We know better than that. I do think Washoe was a great race setup for him, but the train's come off the tracks a little bit here as far as any sort of Eli Tomac momentum. And that pains me to say. I hate to say that, but it's still true, regardless of how I feel about it.
Yeah. And again, we said this last week. It's all based on the high standard of Eli Tomac. He still could be the third best guy. He might have gotten third overall at Redbud. It's just for Eli, third, that's not what he wants to do. And that's not what the fans want to see him do. My theory is, JT, you lived how unprepared most guys are for round one of motocross. I think he actually had like 4 or 5 weeks, didn't do supercross at all. I think he was, yes, he hadn't ridden outdoors, raced outdoors much in years, but I think he was in a somewhat decent spot with his motorcycle and having ridden moto for a couple of weeks. And I think the Lawrences were way off. and they've gotten better. They've gotten the bike where they want it. And I don't know if he's regressed. I think he was just already started in a good spot. You're seeing the best he had. And then Jed and Hunter have each gotten 18% better, to pick a random number that's Jed's number, since then. That's my theory.
Yeah, I do think Jed and Hunter have certainly gotten better. You can see it in their riding. But I was wanting to mention this on the broadcast, and just the timing didn't work out to do it. But I also feel that the Honda, this 25 chassis, if you think about where they were at Anaheim 1, they were nowhere with the motorcycle. Let's be real. That racetrack was really hard, really choppy. Think about Fox Raceway. Bumps are really hard, really choppy. I don't think that motorcycle works as well in those conditions. Now we're east. The bumps are softer. They're plusher. They're rounder. The bike doesn't do as erratic of things because the bumps aren't like hitting parking curbs. And I think that's allowing them to go faster. I think it's giving them more confidence. And they use this word comfort all the time, which is basically the same thing. Comfort then leads to confidence and how willing they are to push the motorcycle, take chances. And I always talk about, for riders to go to be their best, they have to know what's going to happen before it happens. They have to look at a bump, look at a section, and be able to say with 100% certainty, this is what's going to happen when I hit this at speed. And if they don't have that confidence, they're going to, whether consciously or subconsciously, go slower through that section to protect against the unknown. That's just how it works for these guys.
Or they end up like Jordan Smith in the second moto.
Yeah, you jump into the inflatable monster can and almost clean out all the mechanics.
Yes.
Yeah, there's that also.
Yes.
But I do think there is something to the tracks being a little bit more plush that's allowing these guys on this particular chassis to unlock some more speed. And you just watch them. I'm watching them on the racetrack. And, you know, in this pro motocross race, we have so much time on Saturday morning and 70 minutes of racing on Saturday afternoon. You get to see their bikes in every situation. And I'm having a hard time finding their bikes doing anything erratic anymore. Like, I could watch it. Remember that clip at A1 where Jet's bike is just all over the place?
Oh, dude.
Coming across, like, you don't see that type of thing anymore. Like, we just don't see that erraticism or uncomfortability or unpredictability in their bikes. And that leads to them going faster accordingly, just because they believe in the setup they have now. So the one thing I would mention, that's why I kind of brought up Washougal earlier, is at Washougal, there could be a possibility that the bikes aren't quite there, aren't quite as comfortable. If we're going to see any track where the bike just doesn't work as well, that could be the one that maybe brings Tomac into the fray.
Yeah, that may be harder, sharper West Coast style. Because let's be honest, since that break, since that weekend off after High Point, we're not getting those Jet managing the 2.5 to 3 second lead anymore. He walloped everybody at Southwick. He said, oh, it's just sand. You really can't back it down. You have to go a certain speed or you start hitting the bumps different. Okay. But then he won by a big margin in Moto 1 at Redbud. And then he comes from 14 seconds back and 18 positions back to win the second Moto. And dude, when he goes down, I'm like, this overall win streak is probably going to break right here. I didn't think he'd get back to the overall JT. I didn't think he'd get back to Hunter or close enough to Justin Cooper to win the overall. And then next thing I know, he's passing Hunter. So you're like, oh, there is the margin he could create if he needs to.
Yeah, he's got a lot there. I don't think, to your point, I think you might agree with this. Had that happened at the opener or at Hangtown? Like, we saw at Hangtown in that
moto. He couldn't do it.
He didn't have it. He did not have it. And you could say it's the track, which is the point I kind of just made. The bike wasn't working with the track. I think there is something there to it. But I also think that to win early in the season, he kind of needed things to go his way. He needed to get the start. He needed the bike to be working a certain way because he couldn't overcome a bunch of external headwinds. Right now, there's not a lot in his way. Like, I think he can overcome a lot. Bike's not perfect. No problem. I'll find another way to go fast. I crash, I can get up because I can make up 4 seconds a lap. I get a bad start. Same thing. You give me clear air, as James or Ricky would say, I can make up an incredible amount of time in a very short amount of time. I didn't see that in him early in the season. So it's a lot of things which we're coming to. The bike's better. He's better. These tracks are more conducive to all of that working together. In the end, the result is other than Sexton really showing me something in that second moto, no one else is really even close in my mind. When it really comes down to it,
yeah,
if push really comes to shove, they're not close.
Yeah, I think that was the answer we've always been looking for, because even in his perfect season, he was barely winning the races. Like when Sexton got rolling in the second half of the year, he's, you know, the same thing. We're like, he's only winning by 2-3 seconds. These last four motos have not been that. This is, he's letting you know that he could win. He probably could win by 40 seconds if he wanted to. And it is unfortunate because, again, another great ride by Hunter. He's second overall, second in points. He's been second overall the last couple races. Once again, he's horrifically overshadowed. This would be an amazing story if it wasn't for Chet.
Yeah, and honestly, you're right. Your point is valid. You know, there is, it's the Kevin Windham, Tim Ferry story where yeah. Take out Ricky Carmichael, take out James Stewart. Like, those guys win a lot. They have titles. You know,
yeah.
Chad Reed is one of the all-time leaders in titles if you take out Ricky and James.
Yeah.
Like, that's a fact.
Yeah.
At the same time, I don't think it should be like a where we feel sorry for Hunter. And I know that's not what you're saying, but I think there is a sentiment out there. It's like, man, poor Hunter. Well, he could be doing, like, guys, he's going to make a couple $1 million this year.
Yeah.
And he's probably going to make that for the next several years. Life's really good for Hunter Lawrence on a big picture scale. This guy was not guaranteed to have this type of career. So I always bring it up, and it's probably my fault for even posing the question. I'm like, man, you got to be frustrated with, and he's like, nah, you know what I mean? Like, I believe him. I don't think he is, because getting second place in the 450 class and being on factory Honda with a 7-figure salary, it's not that bad. It's really not that bad. And I think yes, he would like to win. Of course he'd like to win, but he also understands who he's dealing with. He knows better than we do, because he rides with them every single day. He knows what Jet is.
Yes.
If he can sit there in second and be opportunistic, if Jet has an issue, it's not a bad life to live. I would have loved to do it. I promise you, I was, you know, a minute and a half behind him. If I was racing, I would have loved to be in his spot. So things aren't so bad for the number 96.
Yeah, I don't think he's bummed. We know this. There's zero rivalry between them. If anyone wants to even try to conjure that up, that's been completely dampened and doused and extinguished. There's no animosity, rivalry, jealousy between the brothers. It's a package deal. I just think he knows how impressive this is, that he is now, at least for a couple weeks, better than Eli Tomac. And he probably doesn't care. I mean, I know he doesn't care what people think, but like, I just feel like he should be getting more credit for how good he's riding. But since he's not the guy winning, he's just merely beating everybody else, it gets overshadowed. I mean, he is the second best 450 motocross rider in America, at least right now, straight out. And then the rest of the day,
he's going to be in, just the last thing, he's going to be in line for like a $2 million OEM deal.
He's got to be.
Right? He's
got to
be
an elite guy.
He's in a great spot. Tomac's aging out, right? He's fighting against the inevitable. It's coming, right?
Yep. And so are five other guys.
Exactly. And Hunter is still pretty young, 25, something like that. Like, he's going to make, as long as he stays healthy, he's probably going to make, you know, $6, $8, $10 million over the next 3 or 4 years. Like, he's actually coming into his prime earning years with the way he's trending. Like, things are looking up more than, and I'm not saying you, it's other comments I've heard from other people. They're like, man, poor Hunter. And I'm like, no. Literally, to the word poor Hunter is wrong. It's not poor at all, because he's going to make
a
buttload of money, and he already is.
The only reason I even feel slightly bad is just because he's ridden awesome last summer and this summer, but he still doesn't have a win to show for it. We assume he will get one, but as we've seen a million times, until it actually happens, you know, a lot of guys have been assured a win for, it took Malcolm Stewart for freaking ever for the Lightning to finally strike.
Hard to win, man. That's why the only one guy. And we're dealing with a generational guy.
Right. And last year as a rookie, he was awesome, but Chase Sexton was a little better, but that was like Sexton's fourth year on a 450, right? So,
well, if you were racing, if this was like 92 outdoors, 91 outdoors, 90 outdoors, lots of guys are winning. There wasn't one guy that everybody's looking at going, ain't nobody beating that guy.
Yep.
So that, you know, it's not that time. Like, you've got a guy that is clearly better than everybody at the moment, and it's fluid. I think Chase can win. From what he showed me in that second moto, it's not impossible for him to win. But everybody in the world is looking at Jet today going, that's the best guy. That's the problem. That's the problem with these guys that don't have a win is until that guy's not around or he has a significant problem.
Yeah.
They're not going to get a win.
Yeah. And Hunter wasn't quite as good. He was close to Sexton last year. So he couldn't get the win last year when Jet was out, but it ain't like Sexton's a chump, which we're about to talk about here. But I just want to talk in general about how nuts the day was overall. It feels like a week ago, but bro, RJ Hampshire, Fly Racing's own JT, he got a podium in a moto.
Yeah, I felt like I was foreshadowing the day. I got to speak with him on Race Day Live right before they went out for their second practice. And I knew that Red Bud was a good track for him. That's why I wanted to talk to him, because he's got two overall wins there, which I think would surprise some people. He's been great at Red Bud. So it set up really nicely. And when I saw him running around, he actually whole shot at the moto. I was like, this is the right guy at the right time in the right situation to do it. A hot day on a track he believes in himself at, and he's got his first hole shot. This is his chance. And there's something to be said for stepping up in the moment when opportunity's there and the door's open, you walking through the door. There is something to be said for that. I've seen so many guys that they finally get their shot and they blow it.
Yeah.
Kudos to RJ, man. He did what he had to do, battling lots of guys that he hasn't been able to beat in that first moto to get that podium.
That is the upside of the RJ experience. We have a lot of fun laughing at trying too hard and all that. But I think a lot of that comes from this self-belief. He is so mentally tough. That creates its own problems. But I also think it creates benefits. He won a Supercross title in a pressure cooker last year. I think that's partly why. He didn't win that Supercross title this year. But let's be honest, JT, he turned a LCQ gate pick into being 6 inches away. If he gets the motorcycle up and doesn't go down, he wins it in the clutch again. This field, rookie, I just don't feel like he gets intimidated. He is such a warrior. I don't think he's scared when he's in third, even as a rookie in the 450 class, where other guys probably get nervous because he's just too gnarly for that kind of thing. But then, unfortunately, he did say he kind of ran out of strength second moto. He did have crash. He said he really can't set his bike up well for those rollers, especially. He's getting killed in there because the wrist is still bad. Which, okay, we're going to run through the whole cavalcade of weirdo 450 rides for everybody. Plessinger, he got sick in the moto, between the motos. He had a fever at some point. I don't know, because before that, he was like on fire in a different way. There were a few laps where he was the fastest guy in the track, and then he was gone.
Yeah, just quickly on RJ, I think he's battle-tested, right? College, if it was a college football team, they would say he's battle-tested. He's been pushed to the brink. They know how to respond to it. And also, he practices with these guys, Malcolm, AP.
Yeah.
So he knows. He knows them. He's not intimidated by them because it's a Wednesday. You know, he knows what it takes to battle with them. So I think that helps speed up the familiarization and the acclimation of racing with those guys. If you deal with them every day, it's not a big deal to deal with them on Saturday too.
He's had a stake through the heart and wanted to race the next weekend. You don't get intimidated by much after that.
Red Bud's not going to kill him if a stake to the heart can't.
No.
For AP, Stephanie, their PR manager, said he didn't feel good all day, felt sick. And then I think as soon as his body temperature got up and heart rate got up, that really kind of weighed in. And I was kind of hypothesizing with James that it was the pace pushing too hard. Like he's been really fast at the beginning, and he's had a hard time kind of holding that. And maybe it was both, but I do think there was an underlying illness that was kind of setting in. And then you couple that with 90 degrees and humidity, and he had no chance.
Dude, the crowd was good, but look, somehow, some way you end up not the three guys. Okay. The Lawrences are good. They're probably going to take two of the three podium spots, but it ended up Plessinger, Tomac, and Sexton end up not getting on that Red Bud podium. The fans had to be bummed on that, which leads us to Justin Cooper, who continues to be awesome. I mean, he's been good, man. Another third overall. He's now ahead of Tomac in points, partially because not Tomac's fault because his bike broke. But he's been good, dude.
He has been good, and we'll get to him, but that's a tough blow for the podium fans to not have Tomac, AP, or Deegan. Or Deegan as a podium finisher. That's rough. If you're like just amped. Like, these people wait all year on Redbud. Like, it is their Graceland. They are so psyched down there. And it's anarchy, Weej. Like, these people are losing their minds down there. And credit to them. You would have never known that maybe their favorite guy didn't make it. I don't even think they knew who was on the podium, to be fair. Like, half of them were blitzed out of their mind. They couldn't have told you if Jet won or Brock Glover won. They would have no clue in that moment. But yeah, to the question, Justin Cooper was really good. And he's just getting better. Like, if you kind of followed along in his career, it's similar to Hunter. He doesn't have the accolades that Hunter had. Like, Hunter's 2023 season was fantastic. He really broke out last summer as well. It's been a little bit quieter than that, but it's still trending the right way. He really showed up in Supercross towards the end of the year as a contender. Like, we thought he was maybe going to get his first win. Had he not been in the fight, you know, helping Cooper Webb, maybe he had a shot at it. Chase Sexton probably had something to say about that. But this summer is more of the same. He's getting better. You know, if not for Jet, I think he probably wins that second moto. If he doesn't have to deal with Jet, maybe he's a little bit more comfortable. Sexton maybe doesn't get to him. Like, the whole dynamic changes a little bit if Jet's out of there, because I don't know. I think Jet lit a fire under Chase a little bit when he could see him there. So in any case, Justin Cooper is on the rise. He is going the right direction. And this is a guy who was on the fringe of not having a factory ride. Like, he was right on the edge. If it wasn't for Bobby Reagan, he would not have had a factory ride. And I think he's starting to pay dividends for anyone who has supported him and kind of like, come on, man, you can do this. I think he's starting to believe in himself along the way here too. And he's not going to be an every week win guy, but he's that guy that he's going to be in the fight every time to be on the podium. And oh yeah, he's dangerously close to taking over the number one seed for SMX World Championship points as well.
Yeah, I think he's down down to 18 16, points.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, it was, I had them look it up. I believe Webb had an 83-point lead on him when Supercross ended. And we're like, oh, late in the year, Jay Coop might get there. Halfway through, he's made up 70 points in half of the races.
Yeah, and speaking of that, Webb's knee is not perfect. I'm not a doctor, so I don't know where this goes, but he definitely twisted his knee out there this weekend. So just watch for that. I don't know where this goes. Hopefully he's fine, but he was definitely a little worse for the wear after the second moto. So something,
you know, I had no idea about that, but I do feel like I started the year thinking that Webb was in this awesome position where I kept saying it was like just a local guy going to the races for fun on the weekend. You're going to bring his dirt bike, have a good time. Now he gets a whole team to help him and meals and a flight, and he makes money. But the no pressure, I'm just doing this for fun thing. I feel like the last couple of motos, straight up not having a good time. I feel like it's trended. When he's getting 6-7, no problem every moto, I'm sure it was like that. I don't think he's probably felt that way the last four motos. Southwick, he was down on the ground. He's getting roosted. I wonder if the fun part is not quite there at the moment.
Probably right. And that knee thing is probably a little scary too, right? Like, the last thing you want to do is start jeopardizing September, whether he's first, second, or third in seeding.
Right.
You start thinking about now, well, if I just keep racing, is it going to get worse? We don't know what condition it's in. I have no idea. I don't even know if he does. But then you start thinking about September and you start thinking about 2026. How do all those things play in? So let's hope he's fine. Let's hope it's a complete nothing burger. Yeah. But there's definitely something going on with his knee.
And by the way, last thing on Justin Cooper, the fact that he almost didn't have a 450 ride was super dumb. Like, I've been screaming this from every mountaintop. I will go on Mount Martin and I will yell this. I'll go to Glen Helen and go to Mount St. Helen and yell this. All the guy ever did was get podiums in the 250 class. Why is any of this a surprise? Hell, this weekend he got on the podium with the same dudes he always used to get on the podium with. None of this is surprising. But I honestly think it was the image. Just no one thought of Jay Coop as like as good as he is. This is not surprising at all. You look at who he's battling with. It's the same guys he battled with for 6 years on a 250. Every other factory team that could have had him. So
I'll tell you.
Yeah.
I'll tell you this. This maybe you do, maybe you don't have a factory 450 ride is what's staring Tom Vial in the face. And I know we're not talking about 250s yet, but the Justin Cooper scenario is what Tom Vial has to be thinking about. Whether it's 26 or 27, I don't care. But if he does stay, and he doesn't knock it out of the park on a 450 at KTM next year, he is facing what Justin Cooper faces, where not overly marketable. It's not like he has this huge USA following outside of Kellen Brower. And so I don't think his Supercross results are going to be anything. I think it's going to be a lot of like 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Yeah.
Similar to Prado, maybe a little better than that. Maybe, maybe. Motocross, I don't know. Some top fives. I don't think he's ready to be at the front yet. So it doesn't set up well for 450 teams chasing him down, and he's not going to be a top priority for 27. It is the Justin Cooper scenario all over again. So I don't know. We'll see how it plays out. I just wanted to mention it because it reminds me a lot of that. And Justin Cooper has grown out of it. He deserves to be on a factory 450 now, but that's what he faced. The same questions we're asking about Tom Vial, we were asking about Justin Cooper coming out of a 250.
Yeah, and let's clarify. KTM wants Vial back next year. They will support him on a 450 next year, but you're saying they don't give you 3 years of rope to become a 450 podium guy.
Yeah, if he's up at the end of 26 and he doesn't show us a lot in 26, which I don't think he would. I'll be honest. I don't think he would.
Yeah.
That's not, you don't have any leverage. You have zero leverage. Yep. And that's not where you want to be. So you all hear all these rumors. Good for you for calling it out on TV because it is a relevant thing.
He has an offer from Honda's MXGP team. He has not signed it. He has an offer. It's for good money. As far as Vial is concerned, I agree with you. I feel like he has more value to a 450 team there where he could win. He could win the title on a 450 in MXGP. The field isn't quite as deep. I'm not saying they're slower, but we saw this year in MXGP, Geyser's out, Hurling's out. A couple things break the right way. Tom Vial is good enough to win, or at least have the leverage to be a guy that could win.
Right. And it all comes back to these situations coming off Justin Cooper, where you have to be proactive and think about not what's right in front of you, but what the situation's going to be. Yep. So in the end, Justin Cooper broke out of that, which made me think of that, and good job with him, because nobody's doubting whether he should be on a factory 450 or not anymore.
No, he's one of the next guys now. Okay, so Tomac, there's not much to talk about here. The bike blew up. It was interesting. In the press conference, JT, a lot of the riders, specifically the Lawrences, said the track was weird and it was heavier and deeper than even normal. And then this is so weird. I don't know if you noticed this. Hunter and Jet said that the ruts were oddly straight up and down. They weren't angled where you could lean the bike over. And they said, so it made every turn awkward. And then, you know, as soon as you have these awkward hitches, what's the first thing you do? You start using the clutch a little bit.
Yeah.
So they said they were having to use the clutch more than they wanted. Nobody uses it more than Tomac. The heavy, deep dirt puts more of a load in the bike. I'm wondering with Tomac if it was literally that simple. He just used the clutch too much and the dirt was deep and it was hot.
Yeah. And Webb had a bike issue also. His engine let go also. So that's three Yamaha Monster Energy Star engine that went let go on Saturday. That's a problem, right? So whether it's Deegan revving too much, Tomac using the clutch too much, I have no idea what happened with Cooper Webb's bike, but he also had an engine let go at the opener, and Deegan had an engine let go at Thunder Valley, which thankfully he was able to milk to the finish line. So
and Mosman's had a ton of problems.
Yeah, so I don't know what's going on. My guess, my speculation would be is they're sitting right on the limit, trying to have the fastest bike by a lot. And when you're on the limit, that means reliability comes down. Those two things don't work together. You know, like pushing the limit and reliability are kind of intersect at some point. So I don't know. I would guarantee you they're having some serious conversations on Sunday and Monday about that, because you simply can't have multiple motorcycles failing on the weekend. But it's interesting. We have not seen that with Yamahas in the past. Like those things have been bulletproof in the past, and I don't know, maybe, you know, like at some point if you continue to push the bikes faster and faster and faster and faster, you're going to find where, hey man, things are going to start to come apart because too hot, spinning too fast, you know, there's a million parts in those motorcycles that are all moving. I think maybe they're up against the limit of what they can push on those things.
Fans are going to extrapolate this as to like the bike they buy, but
no,
Deegan could take a stock YZ250F and probably ride it for 30 hours.
Yeah. How many times have we seen people hold bikes wide open for 10 minutes and they can't blow them up, right? Like this, we're talking about factory motorcycles that are designed like they have hour meters on them for a reason.
Yeah.
Is because the endurance testing is they know they're going to have a failure if they go past these parameters.
Yeah.
So I just wonder if like, hey man, we have these parts. This bike is an absolute rocket ship, but we're right up against it. And when you have these tracks, you're like, you're talking about super deep. They're not the conditions that they practice on. They're not the conditions they do the endurance testing on. It's past that. Then you have the best riders in the world overriding them.
Yeah.
And you get into a situation where you start to see failure.
Okay, so fork in the road here, JT. Who do we talk about first? Sexton or Prado? Where are we going? It's been the Prado pod a lot lately.
Yeah, let's go Sexton. We haven't talked about him at all.
Okay,
so
result wasn't...
Yeah, go ahead.
Wasn't on the podium. That was a disappointment. But I feel like this was a, like I said, a home run. This is a success, I think.
I agree. The first moto, I don't agree. I was not impressed with the first moto.
He said he should have been racing in the combine with the way he was riding the first 10 minutes.
Well, I felt like the TV production crew did me dirty because I was watching lap times really steadily, and he was like 3 to 4 seconds a lap off of Jet. That's how you end up 40 seconds down at the end of the moto. Well, as soon as I say that, I bring a report. They show the lap times are like 1 second off. I'm like, oh, okay, cool, man. Great, great graphic there. So I'm going to talk to Benny or whoever really got me on that one. But the simple fact was he was nowhere close in the first moto, like nowhere close. I was standing there watching both the lap times and them go around the track lap after lap. He was not on the pace. But the second moto, whether it was him, I watched the Weed Show. I watched you interview him. You know, like I think some of it to his credit, like he just said, like just rust, basically, like getting back to race form, figuring things out a little bit. He looked like a totally different guy. And, you know, the detractors will say, well, same thing. Couldn't catch Jet, couldn't pass him, and lost the front end. Fine. Okay. Like, I can't argue it. But if you're looking for something, like, oh, I'm just give me a sign of life here, man. Like, I just want to see that the same Chase Sexton exists. I saw that. So I'm going to take that as a net positive and move on, because the guy that was matching pace with Jet is one of the only guys that I think has a chance of beating Jet, period. End of story. And he's still in there. Like that Chase Sexton is still in there, which at the end of the day is a positive.
Yeah. And let's not forget, this is pedal to the metal Jet. This isn't management Jet, because you can get misled with how fast someone is compared to Jet when he's out front. But this is Jet trying to go from 18th to first. And during that sector, Sexton was actually catching him at times when, you know, Jet's going as fast as he can. He didn't execute it. He tucked the front. We've seen it a million times, but I feel like when he came back at Red Bud in 2023, we didn't see that. It was scary.
I will say, and I said it on the broadcast, and so I apologize for being redundant, but it's really important. When you see Jet, coming down the hill where Hymus crashed last year, or he was jumping down that hill last year.
Yeah.
Jet looks over right after Sexton crashed. Jet looks over. He's looking for Sexton. He doesn't see him. So he's wondering, like, is he right on me? Like, that's the first thing you think is he right on me? Because I've been marking him here every single time. Did he just put in a heater and now he's right behind me? Then he goes over that next tabletop and looks behind him, still looking. You don't see Jet do that. Jet does not do that. That's all you need to know. Like, if you're wondering, who does Jet really think about? Who is a threat? Who's a possibility of somebody that he's got to, like, be concerned with? That's all you need to know. Those actions alone, like the subtleties of those, speak really, really loudly about who Jet thinks is a threat to beat him and who's not. And when he sees Chase holding pace there, he's got to pay attention.
Yep. That's why Stu says, he's like, you'll see other guys maybe pass Jet or get a start on him here and there, but he does not let Tomac or Sexton do it, because he has a respect of, man, I probably could beat them if they're in front of me, but I got to try to make sure that doesn't happen, because I really don't want to know the answer, because even he knows how fast Sexton is. Okay, let's go to Prado now. First of all, you get hooked up by Stu on the broadcast. You've been saying the starts are a huge part of the problem. I think most of us, including myself, are like, bro, he's starting second and third. What? It's not that bad. Well, we saw the difference between being in first and second and third, because for about 10 minutes, I'm like, hey, he's going to win a moto.
Yeah, he looked a lot better. I do think that if it was 70 degrees, not because he's number 70, but just a cooler day, it would have helped him a lot. Talked to some people that around him a little bit, and they said the heat was affecting him. Like, it was, the heat was taking a toll on him. Humidity, pushing the pace. Like, I think he's pushing as hard as he can possibly push because he knows he has to. Like, they're behind. He has to give it everything he's got. And the conditions took it out of him, especially going into the second moto. He just didn't have as much to push with late. But again, I'll say the same thing I said after Southwick. These are steps forward. And I was disappointed to hear that he kind of wasn't on board with that after Southwick. Like, he wasn't optimistic. He wasn't like, man, yeah, we took a step. It was more like, nah, I was just sand and I rode better. And it's just me. Like, I don't see it that way. When you step back, okay, qualifying wasn't great. That's fine. But he's up front on the start. He led laps. He's battling. His lap times are better. He's competitive. I'll take this over what I saw at the beginning. Like, how could you not say that this is better? That's my whole thing. I know that maybe better is getting in the way of good, or good is getting in the way of perfect. I understand that's what can be happening. But if you're not at the end of the day going, okay, we just got to keep going. We are going the right direction. Things are improving. Jorge, go back to Fox Raceway. Go back to Hangtown. Go back to High Point. You don't think it's better than that? I didn't even know who I was watching at those races. Like, Oscar's riding the bike. I don't know who that is. Maybe they put Tickle on it because Jorge's flight got canceled. This is like, those first laps are the Jorge Prado I'm used to seeing. Now he's not finishing. It's not going perfectly. But again, don't let perfect stand in the way of good, because things are getting better. And when things are getting better, you have to, like, we have a saying at Fly Racing, like, find the things that are working and then pour gas on them, right? Like, whatever the fire, like, pour gas on that, because that's what works. So lean into that with everything you have. I think that's what Jorge has to do. When you see things progressing, lean into that. Tell the team, good job. Please keep working hard. We're taking steps. And I don't know if that's happening or not, but that's what I hope would happen, because objectively, as a bystander, it looks a hell of a lot better than it did. And that, what else do you want than it looked better than it did?
He did talk to Lewis there from Vital after. I wouldn't say it was overwhelmingly positive, but it had more pieces of positivity than Southwick or the previous ones. Here's the bottom line. Until he goes 1-1, JT, he's not going to everyone just brace yourselves. Until he wins, he's not going to say everything's great. So we just have to understand that. He gave a little bit more positivity, I feel, here than is Southwick. Oscar told me they made bigger changes and had more stuff that they worked on this week specifically than any other time this year. And I think you even saw some fruit. It's kind of like Sexton. Was the result great? No. But at least in these last two weekends, you've at least seen a sign that the guy can be good. There were no signs at any point, any lap, nowhere. There was nothing in those first four rounds that made you think, this guy's fast. We now at least saw that he's fast. And I don't mean MXGP guys aren't fast. I'm just saying this Cowie in America, Jorge Prado combo, we saw no signs. 2 weeks in a row, we saw signs. He's not going to be happy until he wins. But to me, that's something. And we did see the difference, JT, when he's out front. He is a different rider.
Yeah, it's all he's ever known. It's what he knows. It's what he knows how to do. It's where he's the most comfortable. But I'll tell you, if the bar for satisfaction is 1-1, give me a rough go, because he's not close to that right now.
No,
he's getting a lot better. He is getting better. But like, him being able to hold that pace or even go Jet's pace, he's not close to that right now.
Yeah. So brace yourself, everybody. You're not going to get a doing backflips, smiling, happy interview for a long time unless this gets 40% better real quick. And he probably should not be that way. But at the same time, maybe that's what makes him good. Maybe. And like you said, it's been his whole life that he's been winning. So maybe you can't expect him to go 7-5. for sixth overall and be pumped. A couple other guys. Marshall's been way better than I expected here. He goes 8-9 for seventh. I don't know how he's this good.
I just want to see, in the end, the hard work that's happening for him be reflected somewhere in the things that he says, because it is getting better. And if you're not going to like indicate that at all, I don't think that's fair, because when you're getting better, when the results are getting better, just because they're not as good as you want, and you're not even going to say anything about that, like, it doesn't really sit well with me. And it's also, I just think, factually incorrect. Like, because you're not exactly where you want to be, you're going to completely disregard the fact that you're getting closer. to me is not really, I don't think it's productive. In the end, it doesn't even matter how I feel about it. I just don't think it's productive.
Well, what you don't want is for the whole thing to fracture between he and the team, because yes, he's acting that way when it's like, it is getting better. Like, we are working hard. And I don't know what he says to them under the tent. Maybe it's, we're interpreting a couple of interviews. Maybe his interaction with them is more positive.
I've heard what he's saying not inside the tent, and it's not great.
No, that's all we can go by. Maybe he's the coolest dude ever on a Tuesday at Club MX. And then the great Jean-Michel Bell, Steve caught him tweeting saying, this is not the way to go about it. You have to reset your expectations. And I think what Jean-Michel Bell is saying is, you can't make 1-1 and I should be winning Southwick the standard of happiness right now. You can't do that. That's unrealistic. I think that's kind of the point you're making.
All he knows is winning. So anything less than winning is unsatisfactory. And yeah, there's a lot of wisdom in what JMB's saying. If you don't swallow your pride a little bit and understand that you just walked into someone else's backyard.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same thing. Yeah. Look at RV in 2015 when he went to Europe. He got his head handed to him.
In general, but he won a GP right off the rip, man. He had a win like in the second weekend. He won the GP the second weekend he was there.
Yeah, where were they at? Like Indonesia or something?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is sometimes you just need signs. RV can be like, the eighth day I was here, I won a race.
Right. Well, okay, fair point.
Yeah.
I would just say that anybody who's gone over there,
yeah,
anybody, or they've come here, they would all tell you there's going to be a learning curve.
Yes.
It's too different, and you are in there what they're super comfortable with. If you don't respect that there's going to be a learning curve, you're not giving the people you're up against enough respect is probably what's happening.
Yeah, maybe. A couple other guys let's mention here. Get away from the Prado pod. Barsha goes 8-9. I can't believe Barsha's been this good. I didn't have high expectations. His knee injury was worse than most people probably know. He's coming in mid-season. This field is deep. He got seventh overall. I can't believe Barsha's in the mix already. I thought this was going to be sad and scary coming back like he did.
I'm frustrated with myself because I had him on my fantasy team and I pulled him off. And my whole reasoning was that when conditions are really hard, Justin Barsha does well. I don't know why. He's always been this way. I know he trains really hard. He's a psychopath on his bicycle.
Yep.
But anytime conditions are really, really difficult, it can be really hot. It can be really muddy. Whatever, the extreme conditions, Barsha shows up. And that's why I thought he would do well. And he was an all-the-time podium guy once upon a time. He's not that guy right now. But this was a better race than he's been having. So good for him. Yeah, it's true to form. Justin Barsha showed up on a really tough day.
Yeah, 8-9. That's solid. Let me know if you want to talk about anybody else here. We already covered Webb, 15-8. He was 9th. Malcolm was 11-10 for 8. That's about where he's been. Harry Kulas, JT. He's really got something going here. He's been hovering around that 10th last couple motos.
Yeah, our buddy Bondo would be loving the efforts that Hadi has been putting in. But honestly, Supercross was a complete disaster. Failure by all accounts. And you just kind of wondered like, I don't know. Is this kind of done? It's the coolest fairy tale done. But
as cool as cooled.
Right. Oh, no. He is back. Oh. And quietly doing his thing. Like, listen, if you're not in the top five, you're not going to get a lot of TV time. Sorry. That's just how it goes. We just how this
our TV
works.
Producer is the biggest fan, but even he can't figure out a way to, you know, we can't do 20 minutes on 11th place.
Yep. But he is riding really well. Good job. Good job, Hadi.
A couple other guys we're going to mention here. We're already, look at that. We're an hour into the 450 class, even without Steve. Somehow we're going longer. Pat Terrell, kind of where he normally is. Twisted T Suzuki, 14-12 for 11th. He's been rock solid. We mentioned Plessinger already. He was 12th. We mentioned Tomac already. Ends up 13th. The bad gate pick screwed him. Yeah. JT, would you say that start is one of the worst ones to have a bad gate pick for?
Yeah, pretty terrible. That and Bud's Creek. Both of them are pretty terrible. And both of them are Motocross of Nations inspired starts.
Great point. Speaking of that, Ducati. Hey, Carbonara. Tony Caroli was there. I thought he rode awesome. I can't believe the dude is this competitive he keeps reminding everybody he's not a racer anymore. I know everybody 3 weeks ago, he got 7th at Matterley. But in general, he doesn't even race anymore. He got 9th in the first moto. Electrical problems, if that's true. I mean, that's what teams always say no matter what in Moto2, but dude, I thought he showed up. Like, the pace was good on Tony.
Yeah, and I had been debating some of my friends in the industry about how this was going to go. I thought he would be pretty good. My first take on this was 7-9.
Wow.
And then that was...
that's high.
That was 2 weeks ago. I know, and I didn't know it was going to be 91 degrees. When I saw the forecast on the fantasy podcast, I pulled that back in and I said, like, what did I say? 14, 16 or something. I was worried that the heat was going to be a real problem for him. Mm. I knew he was going to be fast. I watched him ride Matterly. Like, I saw him on form. Like, he was beating guys like Volanderen. I wasn't worried about whether he could ride or not. And that's what this is. He's a great starter. When he was in his prime, he hole shot all the time. He knows what to do. Like, that's half the battle, is understanding what the ask is. A race like that, you get a good start. The track's really tricky and really hard to pass. So you put in like really solid, smart first couple of laps with a good start. And then all you have to do is just execute laps, because everyone's going a familiar, similar pace, other than like the freak show that is Jett and Sexton.
Yeah.
And that's, he just managed the thing. Like, he's raced 10 million motos like that. And I don't think that guys like Kulas or Harlan or any of those guys, like, I don't think they're going to come from 10 seconds down, chase him down and pass him on the form he's on right now. So logically, this made sense. I was just worried about the heat. I don't know if maybe it was affecting him the second moto. He was worried about the second moto to start with. So maybe he was just like, yeah, the bike was not right. I'm out of here. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think the first moto was really indicative of kind of just where he's at close to 40 years old.
I was just impressed, because at one point in that first moto, with Sexton coming back, Barsha's jumped back in. He's a top 10 guy. No one's gotten hurt out of the group yet. I mean, I know everybody wants to complain about the injuries are racking up. There's literally only like two dudes out of the 450 class, like right now, with injury. It's like Ferrandis and like one other guy.
Yeah, I don't know what.
Yep.
I don't know what the broadcast has showed, because I was watching it. I was watching down the line. If they show it, watch Cairoli and RJ on the start. RJ's gate one, Cairoli's gate two. Cairoli just owns him. Owns him. And RJ has to be like, dude, I got third in the first moto. You're not even racing full time and you just ruined me off the start. Like, now I'm buried.
You're
like,
retired.
Pretty bad. Yeah. Like, I mean, Cairoli didn't do anything wrong. Like, they're both battling to get leverage to be on that very inside. And Cairoli just, I mean, it wasn't even close.
Before Plessinger and Tomac went out, or Plessinger slowed and Tomac went out in that first moto, that was the peak of deep field, at least this year, and maybe almost any year, of 450 motocross. I mean, that top 10, 11-ish was insane. And I was just impressed that Cairoli was right there in it. You could jumble it around a million ways, whoever was going to be 5th through 11th, just like a lottery. And I'm just impressed that a dude who's, I mean... Again, it's not his backyard. This is a stock bike in its first race ever. I'm not doubting how great Cairoli was at the top of his game, but I was just impressed that, I mean, he was right there with Sexton. He was right there with Sexton at one point. Yep. All right, Anderson, at least Anderson finished a moto. That's something. This has been freaking rough. Cowie, straight up not having a good time this summer, I would say.
No.
Not been.
And honestly, for Anderson, we were talking about it this week. I just wonder where his motivation level is. He's not going to be on that team next year. I think he kind of knows where he's going in 25.
That was my question. Does he already kind of, if he's got a slot that he's pretty much in, yes, then it doesn't matter.
I mean, I'm sure he's trying, but I just wonder how much he's trying during the week. Like, how locked in is he? You know what I mean? Like, all that plays a role somewhere in here.
Yeah.
It just doesn't, when I watch him, I don't see the fire that I've seen in him. Like, I've seen this guy rip outdoors. Like, it's not like he doesn't know how to ride. This kid is one of the fastest amateurs we've ever seen. He knows what to do. When I just watch him, I don't see that same fire in him right now. So it just feels like he's going through the motions, kind of trying to get through this thing.
A couple other guys to mention. So Shock, whole shots, second moto, bike broke because it's going to surprise you, JT. Kind of came into contact with Barsha, and that broke his muffler. And then the bike overheated because the muffler was, I think, dented. But that's awesome that Shock's doing that. Savachi, man, he was down a bunch of times early too, I think, right?
Yeah, on the first turn? Yeah. First turn, yeah.
Yeah, 21st overall, 16:40. Marshall Welton gets back. Good to see Marsh back. He's a Michigan guy. He goes 26:17, the perennially underrated national number 35 13th in SNX. He's had a rough year, though. Last year.
Let's be real. He's had a rough year.
Oh, yeah. It's been horrific. Came back from another knee surgery. Yeah, this year has been bad. But Welton's better than people think. Guillaume, his bike also blew up in the second moto. This track was brutal on bikes. But it appears that one bike did make it to the finish of the second moto, 20th place. Cornelius Tondel, your baby, JT, that Honda, it made it. Because you're going to need that bike.
I already told Lars I am set up for disaster here because Tondel's going to race. I think he's racing Spring Creek.
Uh-oh.
He's just hammering this motorcycle endlessly. And then they're just going to be like, thank you. Here you go. Here's your motorcycle back, Honda. And then I'm going to have to do starts on it. And Steve's going to have a fully prepped number 96 hole shot machine to walk onto. So I'm ready to call an off because if they give me a bike that like the clutch is smoked and I'm calling it off. Like I'm not going to embarrass myself because I'm on a bike that is absolutely torched. So I'm hoping that Lars will work with me. Just put a new clutch in it. I'll pay for the clutch. It's like $100 if I have to save the embarrassment, because that's one thing I can't do is beat a factory Honda on a bike that the clutch has had three races on and just absolutely destroyed. That's not going to work. But yes, your point is that the number 417 is the bike that I will be doing starts against Steve on at Washougal.
Yeah, after it does two motos at Southwick, two motos at Redwood, and two motos at Spring Creek. You've been set up for failure. We got to go here. This has been an hour and five. Good to see Rod Bell back. Rod Bell goes 32-33. Rod Bell also helped Welton. He drove all the way down to Florida to help with the HVAC at Welton and TJ Albright's house, just like he helps me with the HVAC. Another hideous weekend for Colt Nichols. It's not going well at all. 29-34. I feel like he crashes all the time.
Bad.
Moranz was back. Moranz made the motos. Anyone else you want to mention in 450s?
Honestly, not really. We covered probably more than we normally do.
I can't believe it. We went over an hour even without Steve. A quick reminder of the sponsors of the show, because we keep forgetting Onyx Maps, because Steve keeps forgetting. I'm going to mention it's onyxmaps.com, Onyx Off-Road in the App Store. 500,000 miles plus of trails mapped out for mountain bikes, for side-by-sides, for Jeeps, for dirt bikes, single track, dual sport, adventure. They have a backcountry app for hiking. They have a hunting app for hunting. So just give it a test ride. You can use it for 7 days free. Use the code RACERX, all one word, all lowercase, for a discount if you want to subscribe. You'll probably find things to do and places to go that you didn't know about. If you lived in Idaho like JT and you're actually there, unlike JT, I'm sure they got tons of stuff.
Everywhere.
Idaho's got to be insane for riding.
Yes.
Yep.
It is. Yes.
Yep. Also brought to you by Max's Tires. They do have a scoop. They have a scoop tire now. Freddie Norn's banged up. It's been going rough for Freddie. They had a fill-in on the bike. Max. I don't know who Max. What? I never got the word. Jericho just told me we got Max on the bike this weekend. I don't know what Max it was.
I don't know what that means.
Yeah. I'm just like, what Max? But I didn't get a response. He's using Max's tires. So check out Max's, developed by Jeremy McGrath. He knows what he's doing. Motosport.com. Go through the banner on Pulpamex. Great prices, OEM and aftermarket parts. Dedicated team of gearheads to help you out. They help me out. They can help you out. And Brunt Boots. Let's get into Brunt Boots here, JT. So a bunch of the mechanics, real workers, really use them. Mathis on the notes here just says Pedro and Jelly. Is that, can you get more Mathis than just being so insider to just say Pedro and Jelly? We don't use real names. But these mechanics use the boots. Use the code PULPAMEX to save at bruntworkwear.com. And also Renthal, which a lot of the teams use. They win more championships than anyone else combined. And now I've got Renthals on my bikes, thanks to our buddy Paul Parabinos. I mean, Renthal's iconic, JT. Let's be honest.
Yeah, Renthal's awesome.
Yep.
I would choose a different brand because WPS owns it, but there is no denying that Renthal is it's iconic brand, iconic product, period.
Okay. And then, of course, the show brought to you by Fly Racing. I got that. Look at that Formula Smart helmet. Two of them. I got two of them behind me. Look, everybody. Two. Black or white, whatever you like. It's like a cookie in New York City, a black and white cookie. Okay, so let's go to the 250s. I was wrong, man. We had a big discussion about this after Deegan crashed in qualifying. We were trying to really lean into it on the TV show, which I did not disagree, which I did not agree with. I didn't want to lean in on this.
You did
because
not.
I'm like, bro, he had a Charlie horse. It took him 3 minutes, and then he threw down just like normal 3.5 minutes later. He's fine. We're going to make something out of nothing, and then Deegan's going to use us for his next podium speech, motivation. I guess I was wrong. It ended up being his worst day of the year.
Yeah, it's we'll never know if it was the crash in qualifying that caused him to have his worst day of the year. We'll never know that.
No, but Will did report it was worse than they first thought.
Yeah, it did have some sort of effect. Yeah. No question about it. And when I spoke to Jensen Hendler, he said the second crash, he hit it again. Mm. And that was a real problem after that, because they'd done a lot of work to kind of, you know, Doc Navarro had done a lot of work to kind of loosen it up, try to get him ready for the first moto. Then he hit it again to kind of unwind all of that progress that you had made on it, trying to get it to feel better. But yeah, I mean, what are you going to say? The first moto was an unmitigated disaster, really. Like, he didn't ride well. He crashed twice. He overrode the bike again, similar to how he did in Colorado. There was a lot not to like about that first one. But I will give him credit in the same breath. In the second moto, he salvaged what could have been a catastrophic day. Could have been horrific. Had he let the first moto carry into the second, you're talking about now like a 10-point lead going into Millville. It's still, what, 34? Something like that. I don't know what the
I think it's up
number.
To 38 now. At one point, it was 30.
Right.
Yeah, so, and he gained a lot late in the moto.
Yeah, so good for him for showing some heart and overcoming adversity in the second one to get up to second place, because it didn't even seem like he was going to do that. And I was kind of watching, and I'm like, he's riding. I even said it on the show. I'm like, he just picked it up. I can see him charging again. Like, he understands that second's in the cards. And there's just little subtleties in his riding where I can tell he's pushing again because he knows. And that carried him into second. And it probably won't matter. It probably won't. But you think about something like that. If it did, his bike blew up, which he's had two bike problems already. Yeah. And he needs those few points. Sometimes championships come down to those things.
I'll tell you what, it's awesome to be in shape, man. It's awesome to be in shape. He got a lot of bonus positions because the dudes in front of him, it was hot. That track was heavy and rough. They were the second motos, so it was rougher. And they were tired, and he wasn't. I mean, he probably passed eight guys in the second half. Some of it was speed, but a lot of it was fitness, man. That did bail him out. But, hey, we built the show right. We built a whole theme around take advantage of the opportunity. I didn't think there was an opportunity. But there was, and Joe Shimoda takes advantage. History is written by the winners, because I think Levi Kitchen might have been the best guy. He blew it. Deegan had his problems. All anyone's going to remember, Red Bud 2025, is Joe Shimoda dominated.
And he deserves it. Joe deserves it. You know, Deegan did whatever he did. Joe can't control any of that.
Nope.
But I talked about this earlier. When the door's open, it's on you to walk through it. And the door was open, and Joe took full advantage. And this is what it would have been in the first four motos too. Joe was right there.
Yeah.
Second moto at Southwick, Joe was right there. He was the only guy that could sit 6, 8, 10 seconds back. And you know, now that Hymus is out, he's the only guy that could really like keep Hayden at least honest. And when Hayden's not there, you know what you have to do? You have to step up and you have to take advantage of it, like we kept saying on the show all day. And credit to Joe. That's what you're supposed to do. When you're sitting there and you're like, man, if he even flinches, I'm going to beat him. And he flinched and he won twice. So great job, Joe. That was an awesome day for him.
Yeah, it was. And then it just ends up being amazing. This is Honda. They sponsored the event. They bring in the HRC boss from Japan, who I've been told doesn't come to races in America and motocross races like ever. They win all four motos. They brought over the trials team. I did a demo. And then Shimoda gets the first win he's ever had. I didn't realize this was actually his first outdoor win for Honda. Couldn't have been better for Honda.
It was, I mean, you talk about a Honda day.
Yeah.
Trials, Jet,
yep.
Hunter, president, the like, corporate Honda HRC in Japan, president. Shimoda, like, unreal.
Unreal.
I mean, like, the only thing that went wrong is that Chance Hymus is sitting on the couch nursing himself back to health. That's it. Everything else was just turning up Honda.
I hope the president goes home before Washougal. You do not want him asking questions about what are these bikes? What are we doing on Friday? Can you imagine this?
Gosh. Yeah, hopefully I'm a poster boy for how good their production bike is.
Oh, okay. On Tondal's bike. I got to bring up Kitchen again. No one's going to remember this. Kitchen was unreal. He said he crashed twice at the beginning of the first moto. He comes all the way back 13th to second, and he was going to the lead in Moto 2. I don't know if Shimoda would have beat him, but he got an out crash. And I don't know what he went over the berm in that old first turn and then was still trying to get on the gas on like hard, dusty, slick dirt. It's not going to work.
I saw one other guy do that. I don't even remember who it was, but I did see someone else do the exact same crash as Kitchen. Yeah. But man, what a derailment to an otherwise would have been awesome day. He was riding so well all day long, and then it was just kind of all for naught after that crash. And then I really think that the heat kind of got to him, like that crash and picking up his bike and trying to get going and everything. But it bodes well for him moving forward. Like, that's probably the best we've seen him ride overall. Yeah. So if you're looking for, you know, I'm big on this, as you can tell, like, you just want to see progress, like silver linings. Even if something goes wrong, what were the positives we can take from it? And I think there was a lot of positives from Levi's day, even if the result, you know, if you just picked up the cycle news or whatever on Monday and looked through the results, you'd be like, what the hell happened here? I think Levi's day was pretty damn good outside of the chaos.
Yeah, it says he's seventh overall. That'll never tell the story of how well he was riding. I will give him credit for this. I think he was in 31st at one point when he went to the mechanics area. He ended up getting 19th. He grounded out a few points. I thought he was done. I even said on the show he's out of the race. And then I looked and I'm like, no, wait, he's in 27th. He's in 23rd. He's in 21st. He's in 19th. He could have easily pulled it in. But I want to mention him before the rest of the podium because he was the closest guy to Shimoda, actually. And then the rest of the podium is just like storybook, bro. Which one do we go with first? Swole or Moseman? Because this was not in the cards for either one. Lately, it's been in the cards for Moseman. But I don't think anyone was predicting podiums for these guys at different points of this season. This was awesome for both.
I think you could see it coming for Moseman.
Yeah. Last couple weeks, he's been good.
Yeah, it had been coming. You know, like, even go back to Hangtown. Like, that crash screwed things up. He had a big one, which we kind of thought was not so big, but it was big. But you could see the signs of it. Like, things go a certain way. He gets a start. Deegan has a bad day. Like, it was all there. Swole, I think, is just crazy impressive. Like, he was way better than I thought he would be at High Point. Yep. And he has done nothing but kind of get better since then. And this was kind of a breakout day. Now, he was tired in Sekimoto. He was. Like, he had nothing to fight against Hayden with. That's okay. Like, I'm not holding that against him. At the end of the day,
he said 15 minutes, he was shot.
Yeah. You could see it. I could see it in his riding. He was sitting down in areas like the prototypical, I'm tired, but he still held on. He still fought through it. Everybody was tired other than a select few. And to be second overall, three races in is crazy business. Like, good job for him. This kid hasn't had an easy road. Like, it's been an uphill climb, a lot of it. Even though there's been podiums, Bud's Creek podiums, there's been a lot of success along the way. I think most people kind of forget about Jalik a lot of the time. This was an AMA Horizon Award winner coming out of Loretta's, beating Jet Lawrence, by the way.
That's right.
This is kind of what I think he's capable of if all things are equal.
That's a little bit of that their backyard thing, because yes, Jet raced Loretta's one time. He was about equal to Swole. They battled incredibly close, like all-time close. Like, they had a moto where they basically tied. And then you look at them now and it's like, Swole had grown up racing Loretta's his whole life, and that was Jet's first time there. Obviously, Jet is better now.
It's such just an underreported stat. That's it. Like, nobody really remembers that.
Nope.
You know, like, it's crazy to even think about now because we didn't know what Jet was at the time.
Exactly.
But yeah, I mean, Jalik's been really good for a long time.
You know, to that point, they were actually asked in the press conference, hey, Loretta's is coming up. Do any of you the three 250 podium guys have advice for kids at Loretta's? And they all kind of said, like, your results there don't matter as much as you think. And Joe's like, Jalik was beating me all the time at Loretta's. He was better than me at Loretta's. And I think what Joe's saying, now they're equal, if not Joe's better. And then Moseman said same thing. So they illustrated your point. But anyway, Jalik has been great. I cannot believe he's been this good this quick. Although I got to wonder here, is something going on with the Triumphs in general? They had a bunch of good starts. Harrop got fourth. He went 8-5. Jordan Smith never gets good starts outdoors. He actually got one. We won't even bring up Faulkner. Let's just let him do his thing. But the other three, are this trending here?
Getting better. I mean, to me, the one question I've had was just raw torque and power on the Triumph. Like, that's the one thing I've heard where if they could take a step there, it would really show up. Because you can even talk about Savacci, who had a miserable experience at Triumph. I've heard it come out of his mouth that it was one of the best bikes he's ever ridden. You know, like, down on power compared to, like, he was used to a Monster Energy Pro Circuit Kawasaki. Down on power, but a great, great motorcycle. So I just think you're seeing them maybe take steps to catch up a little bit on power. Talk to Ricky Carmichael a little bit. They had been working on parts. And the thing about that is, it's not that they can't make a fast motorcycle. That's not it. It's the reliability part of that that you have to worry about. If you haven't done endurance testing on a new part, you really can't run it. Like, the teams will basically just say, we're not using it, because DNFing motos on national television is not what we're here for. Like, we cannot afford to have parts breaking every single weekend because we haven't done our due diligence on them. So it takes a long time for engine upgrades to kind of show up on race day, because you need to make sure that they're not going to grenade and also hurt your riders. Like, if they blow up on a jump face, guys get hurt really badly, which happens too. So I think they're finally getting to where the bike is improving on a power level, and that's where you're seeing the starts show up.
Yeah, and I think think of how quickly this Ducati thing was revealed and how quickly they got on the track. They're Italian. I think they're just like, we don't care. Here, we're throwing it out there. The Triumph thing has been so carefully, quietly, secretly orchestrated. I bet you they're more sensitive of, we cannot have DNFs. We're trying to build a brand here. We'll even take a horsepower less, but we cannot DNF. No one is going to stop buying Yamahas this week because Deegan and Tomac had bike problems. They're actually celebrating 70 years right now of rep. They're fine.
Yep. They're establishing a narrative right now. There is not a previous one, right? Nope. So they are currently establishing that, and you simply cannot afford for that narrative to be, our bikes blow up all the time. Yep. Ask Cannondale.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, as we've said, these aren't even stock bikes, but people don't think of it that way. Okay. Harrop was fourth. Deegan was fifth. Ryder DeFrancesco. What? This is a time machine. He turned pro at this race in 2022. If you were leaving Redbud, and let's say you were in lot B, JT, and you drank so much that you were in a coma for 3 years, and then you woke up at Redbud 2025, and you got to the track in time for practice, you'd been like, yeah, of course. If you didn't see anything that's happened over the last 3 years, you would not be surprised by this at all. But we saw what happened the last 3 years. So where the hell did this come from?
I mean, good for Ryder D, right? I don't know where it came from. You know, like, I've heard a lot of theories. He's been in Florida riding. That's kind of raised his intensity. Yep. He's a few weeks in now.
I think the Supercross injuries were worse than maybe we knew. And he was riding better in Supercross than we probably remember also.
His injury was big.
Like, yeah.
Really big
in
Supercross. So there's a mental thing there too, like getting back to believing that you're what you know how to be and do. But I think he was as surprised as we were, honestly, sitting there talking with him on and off camera. I think he was surprised because he didn't think he was going to be. He's like, man, I threw in a crazy good lap in the first one. I don't think I can do that again. I don't know if I can. And he bettered it and bettered everybody else a couple times in the second one. So it's something, right? The results weren't exactly what he wanted, but it's something that you can be like, okay, I can still do this thing. Like, we need to really, like, harness what that was that feeling that you had, the line choice, the momentum you were carrying around. Cause I was watching him. He was doing all the good stuff, all the right things. So harness that, watch it, get that feeling back. But I'll say the biggest letdown of all of it, Weege, was you did not do the Brian Deegan voice. And you did not say that Deegan and Ryder D were racing when it's time. I wanted it so badly when they were battling each other. It was like acid in my mouth. I wanted it so badly.
A lot had gone down at that point. But even from the first qualifying session, the amount of is it time texts that I was getting at 8:45 in the morning. So we were set up for that. But to me, as soon as the start got blown for Ryder D in the first moto and it wasn't great in the second moto, I'm like, we're not going to get what we want. I'm going to save it for when they're battling for a win, maybe. Maybe one of these years. Kitchener, you mentioned, end of seventh. Parker Ross, good again. Hey, maybe we'll, is Parker Ross a Barsha when the conditions get gnarly? Maybe that's Parker Ross, 11-10 for eighth. He was good at Southwick, too.
He's really good in the heat. Really good in the heat. But I'm telling you, he's going to ride himself into a really good ride if he's not careful. And I'm kidding about being careful, but he's showing a lot of promise that teams are looking around going, this kid has something. And not that, you know, he's on Bar X, you know, Redwood, Toyota, Yamaha, whatever the full name of the team is. Not to discredit them, but I'm talking like factory equipped teams are going to start sniffing around if he can keeps putting in rides like this.
Yeah, he's a rookie. He raced Loretta's last year. This is pretty good. It's not like he's some journeyman that's been around 7 years. This is new, and he's getting top tens. Hamaker was ninth. Marchbanks, the starts have somehow gotten worse. So he has over 100 passes so far this year. I think he was in the 30s off the start in both motos this weekend, 10-12. Probably riding awesome. Probably. Who knows?
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough when you get bad starts all the time. Unless you are freakish in your ability, like Tomac, guys like that can come from anywhere.
Yeah.
Really hard to show up as a headline on Sunday morning starting 30th.
Thrasher, again, making steps forward, 7th. I think that was his best moto of the year, 7:15 for 11th. Another good one for Volin. He got top 10 in the second moto. That's, I think, always good for the Club MX team. Then we get to Vial. All right, here's the weird thing with Vial. Okay, we saw what happened. Second moto, any chance of the overall, the podium was blown. Came together with Moseman. He wasn't mad about it. But Moseman was the one that assisted him over the berm. I interviewed Vial. You saw this on the Weed Show. What happened in the first moto? He's saying, yeah, it's still a positive day. We're so much better than we were at the beginning of the year. But how you got hunted down?
Yeah, I think two things. So I kind of felt bad because I asked him about the heat, which is not fair to him. You know, I'm kind of inferring that he got tired. It's not fair, whether he did or didn't. His line choices were bad. Remember that he was kept going outside before that tabletop and he kept getting past there over and over. Like,
yeah. Yeah. As and a Kitchen racer was ruling that caliber, section, for example. Yeah.
Yeah. As a racer of his caliber, you got to learn from the first time. You're just like, damn it, the first time. And then you got to be like, that line sucks. I can't keep going out here anymore. And he kept doing it. And not only is he getting past, he's losing time every lap. Is also like, we're watching him get past there. That's obvious. But the quiet part of that is he's losing a second and a half every single lap going out there and other lines too. So I liked that he, for one, he didn't get offended that I asked him that. I do think he was feeling it a little bit because everybody was feeling it a little bit, but I think he nailed it. His line choice killed any chance of winning that moto. He had the pace early. Like he had a chance to check out. And as this is really the theme, as the track changed, he didn't change with it. That is the key to this thing. And you'll hear really good riders talk about this all the time. You have to stay open-minded with your line choice because if you get tunnel vision and you walk into one line, and if that line is not so good anymore or another line forms that you're not paying attention to, you will get absolutely smoked and not know why. And I think that's what happened to Tom is he didn't see the lines form. He didn't stay with the track as it was evolving, and he paid the price for it.
And a quick note, it was funny. I was talking to Ian and Carlos and Roger DeCoster actually at the first race at Fox Raceway, looking at Sexton's bike. And I'm like, so was it easier this year because it wasn't Sexton's first year? Has it been easier to get ready for motocross this year? And Roger and Ian, they're like, no, the bike's totally different than last year. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Well, apparently that wasn't working. They thought it was okay, I guess, when they rode in California. Once they went to Florida and the tracks got softer, as you were mentioning, they realized that wasn't working. Sexton told me that when he was watching Vial on TV, when he was home, he realized it wasn't working. It's not exactly the 2024 bike, but it's a lot closer to that than they had at the beginning of the year. And Vial likes his bike way better now. And Sexton seems happy with his bike, JT, which we know is not an automatic. So KTM's better, at least.
Yeah.
You can give him that.
No, I watched his interview with you, and you could see it at Southwick. He looked like a totally different guy. So what he said on the bike changes for Southwick and that first half of the first moto, that fully checks out because he looks like that guy.
But I will say, in the classic rider versus team, Sexton just said, we went back to 2024. And I'm like, why didn't you just do that in the first place? And he's like, I'm asking myself that. But then when I asked Ian and Carlos, they're like, it's not exactly that. It's a blend. So it's always the rider knows and thinks and feels and what the team is saying. It's never exactly the same.
Right.
Lux Turner, that was good. 13-11. We know how tough the 250 class is. Dylan Schwartz, he was like the rider DeFrancesco light. I don't know what happened in the first moto. He ended up 39th. He was running up front, 7th in Moto 2.
Remember, so I wanted to, remember he crashed.
He crashed, but it was just a quick tip over.
He couldn't get the bike going. So either it shut off on him, it either shut off and that's why he crashed, or he couldn't get it going again.
Oh, okay.
Because he was sitting on the inside of that corner for multiple laps after that.
He was in like 7th or something.
Yeah, he was.
Oh, then he got 7th. Schwartz is always strong late in the motos, but that qualifying speed, man, he was 3rd overall. Julian Bomares had to come clean. He's been denying this soft track rut problem thing. He cannot deny it anymore. He explained that Southwick was terrible and he's so bad in sand. And this wasn't much better, 16-13. So now it is official. He's not denying it anymore. He needs to work on ruts and soft. I think he's going to stay in Florida now. Yep. Anything else in the 250 class you want to mention? Avery Long on a 9th. We mentioned the Smith wild ride. I recall you saying something about Jordan Smith being a guy who does not back out of it.
Yeah, that's the thing.
He does that's not back thing. Out of it.
No. His like risk tolerance is probably on a scale that most people I don't think will ever approach. It always has been.
It's true, man. And I understand. They're on scoop tires. They're water in the face. The jumps are clay. All that. But he's the only one that went flying 40 feet off the track. And I was bummed because I wanted to see what he could do. It's good to see he was okay. That could have been really bad. Drew Adams, I don't know. They got to do a start. I know that Dubox, like a Yamaha guy, can they bring in somebody, a whole shot guru, to help these pro circuit dudes? This is horrific, these starts.
Yeah, Drew got a good start somewhere. They're not always bad.
I thought he got a good start at High Point. He corrected me and said, nope, I didn't. And I'm like, okay. He's like, but today, that's going to be today. Well, it didn't happen.
Yeah. I mean, we have seen him get good starts before. He was really good in SMX Next starts.
Yep.
So I don't think it's a he sucks at starts thing, but something's not going right. So whatever they have to do to fix that for he and Marchbanks, let's get on it.
Just because it's happening to the team, I just wonder, they have a new engine.
I definitely don't think it's a bike. Something they're doing.
Oh, okay. I mean, I don't think the bike is slow. I think a lot of these starts, this point, we went around and around on this with Prado, where some people are like, the bike actually has horsepower. It's not, but it could literally be like the clutch engagement is throwing them all off. I don't know. Faulkner, the less we say, the better. Let's just let him work under the radar. Linville, I did not know Linville is racing for a Brazilian championship, but he came back for the weekend because he wants SMX points because they were off in Brazil. I didn't know that. That's your style, JT.
Yep.
Anyone else you want to mention in the 250s? We've already gone an hour and a half.
Nope. Spring Creek it is.
J-Mart, bro.
Yeah. Final race for J-Mart.
That's cool.
Yeah, it is cool. Honestly, man, I just don't want him to get hurt.
No.
That's it. I don't care how he does. I don't care if he finishes. Well, I do care if he finishes because I don't want him to get hurt.
Yeah.
But that's it.
I'm going to get greedy. I want one good start. I want him either whole shot top. If he comes around that first turn and he's up there, even for that 45-second burst out of that crowd would be awesome.
I mean, I will take it.
Yeah.
I want that for him. Yes. I just don't want him to hurt himself because I genuinely like the dude.
No, I agree. That's not the way you want to go out. All right, that's it. So thanks to all the sponsors again. Fly Racing, our title sponsor, Maxxis Motorsport. The Brunt work boots that real people, unlike Steve and I, would wear because we don't do real work like that. MaxxisMotorsport.com, OnX, and RacerX, of course. Subscribe to the mag. I just wrote a whole story about that. Guillaume, Kulas, who else in there? Patcherell, Colt Nichols group that had these 450 battles of destruction that you never see, like 12 through 20. You're not going to read it on the website unless you subscribe to the mag. So subscribe to the mag, and then we give you this. This thing holds your phone. This isn't a Cherubis thing. You put your phone right here. Look at this, JT. Keep your phone on your desk with a bike stand. Isn't that cool?
Oh, that's sweet. I've never seen that before.
Yeah,
that's
just cool. Don't read what my son tricked me and put as my screensaver. Jason looks like P-O-O-P.
Nice.
Don't let your 10-year-old get a hold of your phone, everybody. All right, that's it. Best podcast ever. We beat it. We beat it. Suck it, Steve. See ya.
See ya.
This has been the Fly Racing Steve Mathis Show, presented by Maxxis Tires, Motorsport.com, Renthal, and RacerXOnline.com. Thanks for listening and supporting our partners.